Cha-ching! That's the sound of Lowe's Labor Day savings. Get up to 45% off select major appliances and save up to an additional $100 on select laundry pairs. Plus, get 3 bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil for just $10. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Today on The Grave Talks, the haunted Seminole Death House. In the area of Seminole, Florida, there's a building with a tragic and storied past. Its inhabitants tend to leave very quickly for strange reasons. The building is known to the local paranormal community as the Haunted Seminole Death House. It's been home to countless individuals and families over the years. Lives lived and lives lost to unexpected, unexplained, and bizarre situations. What do the spirits of this house have against those still living? And what lies beneath the Haunted Seminole Death House? While the property of the Haunted Seminole Death House lies within a residential community, the specific plot of land where the structure stands is rumored to once have been Native American burial grounds. Do the disturbed graves, the spirits, now occupy and haunt this home? On today's episode of The Grave Talks, we talk with a paranormal investigator named Jody Dean about a family who resided in the Haunted Seminole Death House. Chilling accounts of paranormal activity, including voices calling out in the middle of the night, recounted in vivid detail. Shadow figures roaming the halls, confusing the family as to who was wandering at such late hours. A repressive feeling overcoming the emotions of the family, as well as the tension that the haunting put on the relationships of a family that before this home was at peace and in love. How could such a situation nearly tear people apart to their core? If there was ever a reason to leave a building, the story of the Haunted Seminole Death House certainly presents one. Let's begin our conversation about the Haunted Seminole Death House with paranormal investigator Jody Dean.
You could say it's the best kept secret for a paranormal investigator. It's not open to the public. There's somebody living there. This is a place that several people have lived for short periods of time. Doesn't seem like anybody stays there for a long time. Friends of ours years ago, whenever I first investigated it, they were having a lot of trouble there. And we'll get to that. They had paranormal evidence like I've never seen before. They had things happening there like I've never seen, demonic activity. It almost ripped their marriage apart. They had to get away from the place. They had to sell that place. They put a lot into it, didn't stay there for that long, and had to get rid of it. And now the new people that are living there, they're struggling as well. And that is just the name that we gave it back then, and that's the name it took on, and that's what they call it.
Let's go into the history a little bit before we start talking about the haunting occurrences, the family that was dramatically affected by the paranormal. What is the history of the land? What's the history of this property?
Man, that's the deepest part of this whole thing. Well, of course, after... they didn't know the history at first. They knew what was happening, and that's the stuff they told me. And of course, I investigated it, and then I found out so much. This place was built on an Indian burial ground. It had several deaths there, intentional, accidental, and there were people that committed suicide. There was one that sticks out the most to me was there was not our friends that lived there, but another couple years before they moved in that was home one night just watching TV when all of a sudden a car ran through the front of their house. Guy was drinking, swerving through the neighborhood, went off the road right into this house, and he died on this impact. Shortly after that, the people that lived there that witnessed this incident with the car, they were murdered there. This gets really deep. It's intense. It's somebody else moves in at some point and commits suicide there. All this is stuff that, by the way, was not disclosed to our friends when they bought the house. This is stuff that they found out through neighbors, through research, and of course, stuff that I found out. I brought them the most information on the background of the home, during my investigation and afterwards. There was things that they found in this home that were old relics. I mean, 100 years old, 150 years old things that were buried around the yard of this home, under the windows. Our friends that moved in, the husband, Mark, he's in construction and he was doing renovations to the home. So he's constantly working inside and outside, and he was finding all these things. And as he was finding these things, the activity was also growing as he was finding them.
Paint the picture for us a little bit more, Jody, about the location of the home. Obviously, don't give us the address, but talk about what it's like. What is the setting where this home resides?
It's located in Seminole, Florida, and it's in a residential neighborhood. This area has, there's been Indian findings, I guess you could say, of things from old Indian artifacts to Indian mounds, things like that. In this particular area, there has been so many people that have brought to light that this area was built on an Indian burial ground there. There is not a ton of information about it on the internet. I mean, we spent a lot of time finding out everything that we know now, which was pretty tough, but it seems like everybody in that area knows a little bit, and we just kind of had to puzzle it all together.
When they physically excavated the land, when they created this community and they built the home, are you aware, was there any knowledge of this being a burial ground?
Well, our friends weren't aware of it. And as far as neighbors and stuff go, some people we talked to, they said, when we moved in here, such and such told us that, this was used to be an Indian burial ground right here. And I'm talking about the neighbors right next door to the Seminole Death House. And I kind of heard that from a few people across the street and down the road. Cause I just walked around and pretty much, hey, I don't mean to bother you, but I'm shooting. I'm doing this investigation and I'm a videographer and I'm putting this together. I'm trying to find out information. Do you know anything about this? Oh yeah. We've heard about that, but we've never paid too much attention to it. And just so many people know about it, but it doesn't seem like anybody really knew any history, how, when. It didn't seem like it was affecting anybody else. It was that particular house. So, I feel like that place may have been built at the core of this.
It's just so troubling, but it's something that we've seen and heard stories of, where an excavator or a contractor or a developer will have a plot of land, maybe be aware of its history, of what is there, and how it may be sacred, but the almighty dollar ends up ruling that decision, and homes are built, and then homes are very haunted. That seems to be a reoccurring theme in many parts of our country.
That's what it came down to, yeah, because, I mean, the first thing you would think is it would be some kind of historic sign saying this is some kind of, you know, historic landmark, something, but no, I mean, it seemed like a lot of people didn't know the depth of the story, but everybody knew it was an Indian burial ground, and then there was a lot of things that validated that, you know, with certain things that we found. I mean, we found some amazing, amazing things that were, you know, the family ended up bringing to antique, well-known antique dealers and historians, and just finding out, like, wow, these are amazing pieces that you have here. And they're also very dark. So, you know, there were things that kind of confirmed that there. But I guess the most being the activity and the experiences and the evidence that's been caught there.
Let's talk about some of the experiences, some of the haunting encounters that people began to have at the Seminole Death House in the area.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, to take it back to what I know is the beginning, our friends were happy-go-lucky couple, just like me and my wife, never argue, never fight. I mean, just couldn't ask for a better relationship, better people, good people. Really excited about getting this house, their first house. They come in here and, you know, there's nothing but positive things going on in their life. And almost immediately coming into this place, things change as they move in. You know, when they've been looking at the place, you know, to buy it, and their little trips over there, it doesn't seem like anything has happened. But as soon as they start moving their stuff in, that's when things start happening. That's when it seems like it's all starting to spiral out of control, and quickly too. You know, some of these things, they take a while to unfold. They came in there and automatically they start, you know, arguing within their first few weeks there. And I'm like, you know, that's weird. You know, it feels like there's a negative energy all of a sudden, and everybody's noticing it. Their children, you know, I forgot to mention that. I mean, you know, they had three kids, and they were affected by this very badly. The next few months, the fighting is continuous. The kids are starting to show signs of bad behavior. There's things happening around the house to where they're now saying, you know, this place is haunted. Something that they never really believed in. They were kind of skeptical about this whole thing, or never had experiences to say, hey, you know, something is haunted. Now they're saying, you know, we're hearing voices. Did you hear that? Yeah, I heard that. I'm seeing things at night at the foot of their bed. They told me they seen shadow figures in the hallway. It looked like people were pacing at night. When they were in one room, they would hear something going on in another room. They go in there and it stops, and they're seeing things in mirrors, and pictures are moving on the walls, and they're being touched, and scratches are appearing out of nowhere when they haven't, you know, rubbed against anything, or nobody's touched them. Just constantly events going on every single day. And the biggest thing being that they all know the way they're feeling is not who they are. It's not themselves. That something is messing with them, and now they're really starting to get scared because this is all new to them. You know, they're in a new house. They're supposed to be happy, and they're falling apart, and everything outside the home is good. Work is good. Life is good. Bills are paid. Everybody's healthy. But inside, this is starting to change everything.
When these things started to happen, were they immediately jumping to the conclusion of something paranormal is going on with our home or with our family? Oftentimes, I would think there would be kind of deductive reasoning of maybe this is that or something, some other influence, not always immediately paranormal as the reasoning, but what was their mindset? What was their thought process going through some of that?
Well, they, you know, first of all, they're thinking to themselves, wow, we've bought a haunted home. What the heck are we going to do now? Because, you know, they're at this point, they're believers. And the wife is constantly seeing these shadow people. And I knew what that meant, but she didn't. When she described this, she hadn't been watching any paranormal shows on TV. This is all stuff I questioned her about. You know, she didn't have any experiences in the past. She's basically telling me about these people, and I'm familiar with them because, you know, I'm at this point in time, I mean, I was doing so many investigations, it pretty much was just my life, well, like it is now. But she, you know, she's telling me about this, and I know what she's talking about, and I can just feel the fear. I can see the confusedness in both of these individuals, the husband and the wife. And I didn't get to spend too much time with the kids, but hearing the stories about, you know, one of their sons, Kyle, he's just all of a sudden, you know, he's doing weird things. He's talking more about death and not acting like himself. You know, the daughter's wanting to do certain things she hasn't done without going into too much detail. You know, I don't want to get too much away about the kids, but it's just enough for me to understand that they've got a serious problem. And I had done some intense investigations. I had witnessed some crazy stuff, but I knew that this was going to be something that sounds weird to say, but I was looking forward to, because I was constantly trying to up the caliber of evidence, find the next big thing, and I knew this was going to be it. And it was. It not only changed their life, but it changed mine, and that's a big part of this thing.
When you heard the story, these are people that you know. These are people that you have some history and some background with. So it's not just a random email. It's not just a random call where you're taking someone at their word. There's a level of credibility there, much higher than that. And with occurrences like you've been describing, was there any reservation? Was there any concern of maybe there's something going on here that's far beyond just a normal haunting, something that would be beyond your abilities to not necessarily go in and eradicate, but to go in and even understand without there being grave danger to yourself? What was your thought process going in?
It definitely was serious. It was one of the things that, you know, I as an investigator, I've always been different than a lot of people. I've never worked with a team. I'm a one-man band. And at that time when I did this investigation or knew I was going in there, no, I didn't have any reservations about it at all. I wasn't the kind to, you know, do any cleansings or ask, you know, say a little prayer before an investigation. I was one that just goes in there strong. And I knew that places that I had investigated before we're not going to compare to this because of how bad I seen them affected by it. I knew that we were going to get messages there. You know, I knew that the EVPs were going to have a lot of meaning. I knew that we were going to probably get touched. I knew that this could probably stir up things even more, because even though they're telling us about this, they're not acknowledging this thing in their own home. And I knew that once that happened, that if it knows that we know it's there and we acknowledge it, that it's going to feed on that. And if you, you know, show fear with that, then it's just going to completely run your life. And it seemed like it was feeding on their fear. And I'll tell you about that later on. That came down to being the whole thing was fear. And I would say this, they suffered until they got out of that home. And they've been out of the home for some years now, and their life went back to normal, like before they ever moved in this house. They are the happiest couple in the world now, just like they were before. The kids are good. Everybody's doing great. It was like the further that everybody and anybody got away from this place, the better their life became.
Let me ask you this, Jody. Do you believe there are locations in this world that are haunted, but they're not fixable, where there's nothing any living person can do to eradicate whatever the entity or beings are there to make it a peaceful, inhabitable environment?
That is the best question. The best question ever, especially pertaining to this place. I think that this is one of those places that is damned. There is no fixing it. No priest, no exorcism is going to come in there and relieve what is there. There is too much history there, which obviously isn't available to the public as it should be. But there, we know that there is too much history there, too much energy there from what we may never know. What we do know is what happened there in a short period of time with them. And now that the people that are living there are having these things, and I believe it's one of those demonic infestations. That word's been mentioned a lot in the last few years. And I believe it's one of those that is the real deal. I believe they're very rare cases. I know a lot of people on the internet, they say, oh, it's demonic activity. It's demonic activity. I think if they seen something like this and witnessed it, they would probably run. They have no idea this is a true demonic infestation. And I don't think there's anything that's going to come in there and beat it. Except people may be able to cope with it for the time being, knowing that these things do feed on fear. If they know they can control you and get into your mind, they will. If a strong mental person can come in there and stay focused and not care and live their life and really just constantly have that mental block towards this negativity, they can cope with this. I was kind of saving that for another question, but I will tell you that's how I beat what happened for me investigating this place. This place came into my life after I investigated it. I've been doing this 8 years now, have 600 investigations under my belt, and I can tell you that nothing compares to this place. And I've done a lot of places. This place affected me for 6 months after I did it. And I learned how to beat it, but if I wouldn't have, I was falling apart just like they were. Something from there followed me home. It was that strong that not only did it continue ripping them apart, but it started messing with me. And that's the first attachment that I ever witnessed and I ever suffered through.
Tell me more about the investigation when you went in. What did you experience in greater detail?
Well, as soon as I pulled up in front of the house, not one of those people that get scared or anything like that. I never have fear. I mean, I've been in sanatoriums and crazy places, and I never get those fear jitters like, oh man, I'm scared to go in this one. And this house that looks like a normal house, I pull up in front of it that day and something just crawled all over me, man. Like, this is a big mistake. But I'm committed now. These are friends of ours. This is what I do. I'm going in there. I'm at least going to try and provide some kind of answers for them. I grab my gear, I meet him at the door, and as soon as I walk in, I feel something there. And at this time, I wouldn't say that I've developed the kind of empathicness that I have now. Not like psychic, I can tell the future, but now I'm really in tune with things where things just come to me and I double validate them then through evidence I capture. But at this point, I walk in there and I can feel the presence of people other than the people that I'm talking to I can see with my own eyes, and I can feel a negativity there. First of all, any location I go to, I walk the location. I try to see if I feel anything. In every part in that home, I felt like something was on my heels. And before I even started investigation, I felt you know, something just kind of like move across my neck. Then I felt something tug my shirt. And I never felt anything like this in a short period of time. Like maybe I'd do one investigation and that would be the only thing that happened. You might feel like you got touched. Just a few hours in this place and I had been touched. I had asked everybody at one point to leave the room and just kind of let me, you know, just focus and talk to it without recording and see if I could have any personal experience. And I could hear with my naked ear, I could hear a response. What it said, I don't know. I just know how it made me feel. Then I begin the investigation, and that's when things got really crazy. I asked the couple to be present with me while I investigated, as well as my wife at the time. I wanted them to witness anything maybe that could happen. I'm a bit of a provoker, and this is not the kind of place that I needed to provoke at, but I wanted to see what we were dealing with right then and there. And that's the way I opened up the investigation. Not a good idea for anybody listening. I come in there and I start, you know, challenging it, asking it to show itself, demanding that it tell us who it is, what it is, that it's, you know, it needs to leave this family alone. And some of the real time responses that we got that day are kind of branded into my mind. I mean, I'm asking, you know, do you believe in God? And you hear this crazy voice come through within seconds of me asking this question, saying, "Jesus, who?" I mean, and it sent chills down our spine. I mean, and a lot of people, you know, that don't know how the spirit box works, I kind of explained this to this couple, like, this is a way that we can hear in real time if spirits communicate with us, because they're energy, they communicate through frequency, and we're listening for responses to our questions. And you know, we want to make sure that the sweeps are going underneath the voice, that the voice isn't blocking out the sweeps, because then that could be radio. So I explained this to them, and all these responses that we're getting are almost immediately after my questions, several sweeps under these voices, validating that they are legit. And you hear at one point, the kids were in one of the bedrooms to the far back of the home. And you hear the father, which is in the room with me, say, "Hey, I'm going to go in there real quick and tell them to settle down." And on the spirit box, that same voice that said, "Jesus, who?" You hear the voice say, "Go in there." And so at this point right now, I'm like, can you tell the kids to maybe go to the neighbors or something? I feel like, you know, we need to go in here and check it out. I go in there and I ask, "Were you murdered in here? Is this where you hung yourself?" Because I'm trying to figure out what spirit this could be from which death that happened. And when we go in there, we all hear "no." And a few seconds later, you hear, "You're going to die." It was something out of a movie, and something that I'm sure all of us, till this day, like, you know, we talk about it. Like, you cannot believe the responses that came through. And I wasn't even, this wasn't a 24-hour investigation. I didn't go for 2 or 3 days in a row coming over there to the property. This was a maybe a 6-hour thing, going in there. And we caught so much responses that obviously we knew something mean. It sounded like it was evil was there. And then that's when more stuff started happening. If you'd like me to go on, I'll tell you that at this point right now, I'm starting to get very, very angry. Like something is taking me over. Like I felt like something just kind of jumped into my body. I feel really, really pissed. and they're all noticing it. And my wife's telling me, you know, maybe calm down. Don't be so aggressive with it. And I felt myself losing myself. I barely mentally, and this is something that never happened to me before. And now since then it's happened to me, but never at the caliber that this was. I mean, this was something showing me what it could do, because I was challenging it, and it was pretty much, I took it as saying, look, I'll show you what I can do. And I had to step away from the property for a little bit. It's maybe like 20 minutes, just kind of regain myself. And I tried to go back there and say, okay, well, you know what? You're going to have to be tough, but don't be so tough, and try and figure out what it wants. So I do that. I come back in. We're setting up EMF detectors all over the home, and they're all going off, which is crazy, because these detectors, when we go into places, you know, we usually will set them in areas where we'll sweep, first of all, to make sure there's not enough energy there that's going to set them off. Something legitimately is going to have to interfere with, you know, the surrounding EMF field of this detector to make it go off. So we set these in places that we feel are good spots. But here's the big thing. When I'm asking questions, when I'm asking it to do something, it's doing it. There is direct communication there. And then between the spirit box voices, the EMF detectors going off at the same time, we're double validating everything. It's starting to look like something out of a TV show. And we're all, you know, we're all in shock here. They've never seen anybody do this before. And me knowing what's happening, I'm kind of like, this is the holy grail of investigations. And it just kind of spiraled out of control for the rest of the evening. Everybody started getting angry. Towards the 6th hour of the investigation, the husband was like, you know, we can't do no more of this. We got to shut it down. It seemed like he got upset and needed to just kind of be alone. He needed us to wrap things up. And of course, you know, we left with a ton of digital voice recorders. A few digital voice recorders with tons of recordings from that. That just over the next few weeks, we come to find out that we've caught so many EVPs in different rooms that we weren't even asking questions in, that we had left, and we're hearing different tones, different voices. And looking at all the evidence in a whole, I'm just blown away. Like, basically, you just took like 20 of these paranormal shows and crammed them into, you know, one investigation, and you've got so many responses and nothing good. There was nothing, can you help me? Can you hear me? It was all die, kill, the words rape, hung, things that just you pretty much you look at and you can't say anything else, but you know what? There's something very bad there. And there's a lot of it.
When you got that message and you got that direct threat from something on the other side of you're going to die, what makes you continue on?
Well, I've never really changed to this point. I love evidence, whether it's good, it's bad, if it's just, you know, crazy, evil, whatever it is, because, you know, my whole thought process is I'm doing this for the research, and I want to see what these things can do. And at that time, that's what I was thinking is, you're telling me this, I want to see what you can do. I had always heard people talk about they had, had attachments, and I kind of, you know, I was just a skeptic 8 years ago, and this investigation happened a few years into me being an investigator, and I had never witnessed an attachment. I had never heard the powerful Class A EVPs in real time like we were capturing. And I wanted to see what could happen. And trust me, a lot of people have said that to me. You know, that's one that I would have walked away from. But I feel like if we walk away from it, then, you know, what will we really know? And I learned so much from it. I mean, so much from it that it's inspired a book that I've been working on for a year and a half. And I'd say a majority of the book is about this investigation. But that was just my whole thought was, you know what, I need to do this and I need to bring them some kind of evidence. And at that time, what I would do is I would investigate a place. I would put all the evidence together, pretty much like what I do now for my channel. But I didn't put it out there for the world to see. I would just put it out there for the people I was trying to help. And that's why I stayed, so I could have something for them and something for myself to know. And when they seen the evidence, of course, they were like, we need to put this place up for sale, because not only do we know what's going on and see it, but now hearing all this laid out like it is, it's freaking terrifying.
After that first night in that house, after that one night of sheer terror, did you ever return to the home? Were you ever able to return to the home to investigate further?
I did not. I wanted to, and I didn't want to. I even had a little episode there for coming weeks after, to where I would go to turn down the street and I couldn't. And then there was a few times where I made it down the street and just drove past the place. I couldn't stop. And it was because, at that time, I guess I felt like what had followed me home that was just started unraveling right away. I felt like I needed to bring it back somehow. And I didn't really know how to do that at the time. Nor would I come to find out that it works like that. But I kept on wanting to go back, and I'm sure I was welcome, but I couldn't.
You had mentioned you felt there was an attachment that occurred to you after that night, or during that night, and then followed you home and into your everyday life. Tell us more about that.
Whenever we left there, I told you a little bit ago how I felt during that investigation. At one point, I got really, really mad and got upset, and I felt like something kind of just jumped into me. I would, over the next 6 months after this investigation, starting it within the first few nights of coming back from it, we started to see things in our home that we had never seen things in. You know, we heard that an elderly woman passed away in our home, and it was, you know, ironic that we would communicate with her, we felt, you know, once a week, twice a week. We would just try and reach out to her, and we would capture a voice that sounded like an older woman. But we never had anything crazy going on. Now, all of a sudden, we're seeing these shadow people in our home. My wife is seeing them, and, you know, she was more of a, still in the skeptical stages about this whole thing. You know, like, we knew that we would go and capture EVPs, but when you hear people saying, oh, you know, I seen this full body figure, we were kind of like, yeah, I don't know, you know, you know, we would see shadows, but the whole full body thing and people describing in detail, like, I don't know about that. We started seeing it, and, you know, she was constant. It affected her a little bit more as far as she was terrified. Me, I knew something was going on, and I felt like I was getting very mad whenever it would mess with us. Like, it was trying to make me mad. It was trying to manipulate me emotionally. And, you know, some cases I can go into, I can feel the sadness of a spirit. I can feel if it's angry, if it's curious, if it's wanting to, you know, if it's wanting to know what's going on. Why can I hear people, see people, but they can't hear me or see me? This was different. This thing was wanting me to feel hate. It was wanting me to, I'll give you an example. I've done music for a long time just for fun as a, you know, side thing I enjoy doing. I built a beautiful vocal booth in this home out of wood. I was so proud of it. Out of nowhere, something set me off one night. I felt this thing messing with me. I went to work that day and I had heard this voice in my ear constantly. The voice I was familiar with, the raspy, evil voice. And I'm like, wow, this is really following me to work now. I come home and I'm hearing this. I ripped this vocal booth apart with my bare hands like it was nothing in a matter of seconds. And Alicia looked at me and she said, Alicia, my wife, she looks at me and she was like, what is wrong with you? What are you doing? And I just looked at her and I said, I don't know. I don't know. I spent a lot of money on this thing, time, and I did something. It wasn't me. I mean, this thing was controlling me that bad. Me and her started arguing and fighting, something we never did. I mean, until this day, I can tell you we've probably had 5 arguments. We just always been on the same page. I know it's rare with couples, but, you know, we just get along really great. And there was something here that we seen was wrong. And it happened after that during that investigation and after. So we knew that we had brought something home from there. We both felt, you know, we brought something home, and it got really bad. It started to take a turn in our relationship. It was messing with me at work, in the home. I'm constantly, if I was recording music, I could hear voices that weren't a part of the music. If I was just laying in bed, we could hear something. She would wake me up in the middle of the night and say, Jody, there is somebody standing at the foot of our bed. And it started happening so much that I would just look at her and say, I know, just go back to bed. We were learning to live with this thing. And that's when it got scary, and I had to figure out how to beat it. And I did. It finally came to me, and I figured it out. Well, I realized that it had been preying on the fear of the people that were there. You know, they were scared of it, and then they showed it that. And, you know, and by the way, we kept in communication with them. You know, of course, they're friends of ours, and they would constantly tell us, you know, how they just started crying, you know, today for no reason. Alicia, you know, she's showing these signs around the house. She's, you know, I think there's something there. I think there's something there. You know, she's bugging out. And I said to myself one day, I wonder if we don't acknowledge it, if we just live our life and try and think about, you know, whatever positive we do have going on and stay focused and don't show fear, if it will mess with us as bad. And I said, do you think we can do that? I said, can we please try it? You know, I wanted to get her on the same page. I felt that was the only way it would work. And we did that. It was a little tough because, I mean, things were constantly going on. But we got onto the same page. We stayed focused. We did anything we could do to take our minds off it. We tried to stay out of that, you know, leave the house more when we could. And it felt like that was doing something. And then over time doing that, it got easier for us to do, of course. And I felt that energy slowly die out. But I mean, it was a job, you know, I mean, you know, sometimes we got to let our focus walls down. I mean, we just got to relax and let things happen as they're going to happen. But in this situation, about the fourth month into this happening to us is when we started doing this, and it took about 2 months and it slowly died out. And then we moved from there, and ever since then, everything has been great. And I go into investigations now with that wall up compared to how back then, you know, it was just guards down. Now I kind of know. I still will provoke. I still will do certain things to capture activity, but I keep the mental wall up and say, you know, this is what you got to do to make sure if something does grab a hold of you, there's enough of you still there to say, look, you're not going to control me all the way. You've got to push it out. And I found out, and I write a lot about that in this one chapter of my book, it's all about fear. I really think that it is. Without fear, they have nothing. Because if you're not scared of them and they can't control you, then technically they can't hurt you.
After it wasn't being fed, so to speak, do you think it moved on? Do you think it went to someone else? Do you think it was eradicated? How would you describe your feelings as to where this energy, this entity went?
I think that it is somewhere. I don't know how near, somewhere in the balance, you know, where I will say this. Occasionally, once in a blue moon, I will hear the same voice that I heard at that investigation that day come through my spirit box, and I've only had about 7 or 8 new spirit boxes since then. So there's something, whether it was what followed us or it's always been here since then. I think it's lingered around a little bit to see if there might be a window open. You know, I believe a lot in transferable energy, and it's possible that sometimes when I open up these windows or do certain things that they can know that I'm trying to communicate with them, and maybe they find me again. Whatever the case may be, it does show an appearance once in a blue moon. It just doesn't affect us no more. There's been a lot of times where I've been doing a live stream or something, and I'll hear, as I said, the voices come through, and I just haven't had anything like what happened to us then happen since then.
After going through what you went through that one night and then the subsequent time after, where you were followed by something that was trying to hold you back, something that was trying to repress you, and essentially put you into a depressive state. That's what these things try to do. They try to eat away at our well-being. Do you have any reservations? Say you were to be called up tomorrow by another trusted friend or someone in general that you can validate the story a bit and realize how serious of a haunting it may be, whether it be at the level of that house or even worse. Is there any hesitation with you in going back into a situation to investigate that could potentially hold something very dark that could, in fact, attach itself to you again?
Absolutely not. No, I've never learned my lesson, and I never will. I absolutely love this, good or bad. I've said it so many times. I know now. Since then, I have had attachments and stuff, and there are ones that I have welcomed. I mean, I literally have done investigations just trying to get attached, and I tell you for why. I know that sounds crazy, but in the research, and especially for writing the book, I've wanted to learn everything that I could about these, but keeping that mental wall up that I've talked about. Because I figure we can feel, I want to know what spirits feel. I want to know what they see. And I feel for that 1 minute or those few minutes, however long they can attach to you, you kind of get a glimpse of that. If anything, you can feel how they feel. You know, I mean, they can't necessarily give me their spirit eyes, I guess. Of course, there has been things that I have seen whenever I've undergoed these kind of things. But I have felt the emotions of another individual and seen things that seen and heard things that I otherwise wouldn't have. And I really believe the thing, I know that it's almost like you can let yourself be taken a little bit, and you can then say, okay, it's enough. You can snap out of it. and you know, just kind of push it away and say, look, you know, now you have to keep a distance. Since then, I have found witchcraft. That is something that I wasn't into at the time, something I researched for years. And now I use that in investigations and fueling and protection and cleansing. And so I do a lot now after the investigations. I don't want to do it before because I want stuff to happen. You know, I don't want to go to some asylum to investigate and say, you know, nothing attack us, nothing do anything. Then we go in and nothing happens. I want anything that can happen to happen. And then afterwards, I do what I need to protect me and my family. So that's, you know, that's where I'm at now with that. I will keep provoking. I will keep going to the any case that I can find to learn everything that I can. Because, I mean, how else could we truly learn about demons if we don't, you know, if we don't deal with them and learn what they can do?
With you having firsthand experience of something very negative, very dark following you and being a force, have you ever had a situation where something attached to you that was the exact opposite? An attachment, but a positive one?
A few times I will say something like a positive attachment, more or less. I wouldn't even call it attachment. I would call it like you're dealing with the spirit. Like if me and you were to sit down and talk about something going on in your personal life and it was heartfelt, and I'm just listening to you, I would kind of feel like, you know, I feel that sympathy, or I feel for you. Like when I'm trying to communicate, say, at a cemetery at night with this with the spirit, somebody I know just maybe passed away last year, I'm trying to communicate with them, and all of a sudden I just get really happy or really sad, or I'm seeing things, you know, that they want me to hearing things that they want me to hear. I'm coming back with positive messages. As far as a true attachment, to where I almost feel like I'm somebody else in a way, like mentally I'm still there, but I can feel like there's something else there too. No, I don't really feel good things. And I think that's because the good spirits aren't probably trying to push themselves into us. They're not trying to, you know, grab us and use us like that. I mean, that's just my theory on it. I feel that, you know, anything that's going to truly attach to us is going to be something that's trying to manipulate us and hurt us. And so I think that's why, you know, that I don't really feel it too much like that.
Give us the story. What is your knowledge now on the home, now that your friends have moved on and moved out? What, from a distance, is your knowledge of the Seminole Death House?
Well, this is kind of interesting. So they moved out, and you know, within their first 6 months moving out, we talked to them several times, and they just, everything was going great. You know, the kids are doing good, they're doing good, they're happy. You know, the wife tells us, like, wow, moving out of there was like crawling out from a dark sludge. And a little while down the road after they moved out, and I knew that this was something I probably should have stayed away from, because it could be hurtful to our friends. But I just happened to find the energy and strength to go by that home. And I asked the people, you know, I said, I used to know somebody that lived here. I just wanted to ask you guys some questions, you know, like I heard stories about things that had happened here in the past. And I was curious if you guys have heard any of those stories and if you've had any experiences. And they told me that, yeah, that you know, they were, you know, very weirded out at first, but then they were like super happy that somebody was talking to them about this, that they've been witnessing a lot of things and it seems like there's something not right there. And I didn't go into depth of what happened with my friends. You know, I don't want to scare them to death or anything. I just wanted to know and let them know that, you know, I had heard things about it. But I wanted to see where they were at. And I told them that you know, not to live in fear, not to show fear, because these things can feed on fear. And they told me it's hard not to live in fear when you live with it. So, yeah, it seems that getting away from that place, good for our friends, new people coming in, same situation. And I could tell they were holding back a lot, too. I mean, there was a lot they weren't telling me, you know, just meeting me, of course, probably. But they gave me enough for me to know that they're suffering, too. And for me to say, look, this house is everything that we know it is.
To find out more about the Seminole Death House and Jody's investigations and videos, you can visit his website at huntingthedead.com. That's going to wrap up today's episode of The Grave Talks. If you enjoy the program, please do us a favor. Press subscribe, whatever platform it is you're listening to us on. We greatly appreciate that and could not do the show without your support. Let your friends know about it as well. Sharing on social media helps tremendously, as does those reviews on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you download podcasts. Reviews, stars help us tremendously in letting other folks know that the show is on the air. Please do share and review. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.